Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeira. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking payment unpause, CD laddering, and caseless crazies.
Right, buddy, this is our Friday flight. We're going to talk about the top headlines that we came across this week and specifically how they're going to pertain to your money. By the way, we call it the Friday flight because, you know, when you go to a brewery, you get a flight. It's just a nice little tasting platter of all the different beers.
That way you're not committing to a 16 ounce of a beer that you're like, oh, not my jam.
So, man, I really like going to breweries where they let you take your own card and you can get your own beer.
Pour just an ounce or two.
Yes, yeah. Because I can, at my leisure, sample the different beers. I went to one of those a brewery here locally that offers that. Beer was okay, but this is the first time that I've ever experienced that aspect of a brewery, and I freaking loved it.
To make you feel powerful?
Well, it's just, I love variety, and the ability for me to, I think I literally tried every single beer that they had on tap, and there's like 12 of them.
Did you do like a suicide where you mix them all together?
That would have been terrible. No joke, I only spent like $9.58, and I got to try every single beer that they had.
Yeah.
Maybe there was like one or two that wasn't quite my jam.
Just didn't sound appetizing.
Yeah, small tangent, but I think more breweries should totally do that.
Yeah,
because I'm all about it. Because you just feel bad asking a bartender. It's like, hey, can I get it? You mind if
just
I get a taste of that?
Yeah. Can I get a taste of that one too? And that one too? Yeah, no, you do.
I feel like you're wasting their time, and then you end up tipping more because of the. Anyway, side note. I wanted to mention, I was talking to my folks recently, and I am considering going back to Augusta, which is where I grew up, in order to get my teeth cleaned. Turns out that they still go to the dentist that I went to when I was a kid, and he also is still locked into the 90s because he's only charging 1990s prices.
Oh, wow.
Versus what dentists are charging here. It's almost like a form of...
He didn't get the inflation memo.
No, no, but it's like local tourism, or not local, it's like medical tourism without having to go abroad.
Yeah, staying, not having to buy a plane ticket.
Staying stateside. But what are your thoughts on that? You think this is something I should consider doing, or am I being... Is this a frugal move, or is this cheap?
Okay, so I like it for two reasons. One, you get to visit your folks. At the same time, you get a dental cleaning for a whole lot less money.
But my folks would say, I'd rather you be hanging with us rather than show up and then...
it's not going to take that long. You're going to jet for an hour, get your teeth cleaned, and then come on back and hang out with them. Which, yeah, I think is great. And plus, I think that's what it takes for you to actually go to the dentist. Some sort of money-saving enticement. So
hang out. We don't have dental, so when you pay out of pocket... You pay attention to all the charges, and one of the things...
Which is really how insurance should work most,
honestly,
a lot more,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend.
You need to be price conscious.
Yeah.
And I am being price conscious. Unfortunately, it probably has meant that I have avoided going, but I don't have cavities, so yeah. it's not something I deal with.
I was talking to a doctor friend recently, and he was talking about how, well, man, I just wish I could avoid insurance completely and just charge cash prices. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, that's really the way a lot of our insurance should work. The healthcare system's so messed up in so many ways. I don't think we can solve that today.
There are some doctors that are moving to that model, yeah. Right?
And dentists work along that model whole lot more than traditional healthcare.
Yeah, where you have access to them and you pay a certain amount every single year, so instead of paying premiums for a health plan where you have that, what do you call it?
It's concierge medicine.
The concierge model. So anyway, they're talking about, they're like, literally when you sit down on his chair, like springs pop up. And so he puts down a cushion on top of the chair so that he doesn't have to get just a new...
never updates anything. That's how he keeps the prices low.
Anyway, all that being
said. A man after your own heart,
I'll let you know. Well, I love it. Yes, because there is a market for that. There is market for folks who don't want the highest end experience where they hand you like a seltzer or, you know, and, oh, could I get you a warm towel? It's like, no, I'm just here to get my teeth checked.
Yeah, for as little money as possible. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
All right, let's move on. Let's get to the stories we found interesting this week, our Friday flight. And Matt, let's talk about student loans for a second. We haven't touched on student loans in a minute because there hasn't been much to discuss. But there is a firm timeline now for student loan payments to begin.
That's
again.
Right.
Yeah. And that is all thanks to the debt ceiling negotiations, which were just silly the whole way around. But it sure looked like payments were going to resume towards the end of the summer, no matter what. The specific timeline really depended on exactly when we were going to hear from the Supreme Court on that forgiveness ruling, which that could happen in a matter of weeks. But as of now, because of that debt ceiling agreement, there is a firm timeline with no possibility of another pause. So How to Money listeners, everyone else too, with student loans, you got to be prepared to start making payments starting August 30th, right? The Supreme Court, by the way, is likely to make a ruling, like I said, in a few weeks. On the forgiveness front, I wouldn't hold your breath. It's unlikely that the Supreme Court is going to uphold that executive action doing that $10,000 or $20,000 worth of student loan forgiveness. I don't think forgiveness is likely to occur. But when it comes to student loan payments restarting, let's say you are banking on that forgiveness. Of course, the reality was eventually they were going to restart. Mm-hmm. And you really have to, in particular now that the writing is on the wall, that it's a definite, start making plans to reincorporate that payment into your budget moving forward now.
That's right. Yeah. Honestly, I think this is going to be a shock for tens of millions of Americans who actually, I mean, I think I saw that it's over 40 million Americans who have student loans. And I saw that at the average payment is around $400 a month. That is a lot of money, and that is a lot of people. So I'm actually really curious of the impact that this might have on inflation as well, because they were pocketing that money before. It'll be really interesting to see. Like, I'd be willing to bet money, perhaps, that we see inflation continue to tick down over the course of this year.
When more of
there's less expendable income.
When more of your income goes towards debt, you know, debt pay down and debt maintenance, you're going to have less to spend on other things, and that's going to bring prices down across the economy. I think you're right.
I think for everything, everything from housing all the way down to like the price of a drink,
or sure,
the price of dental care as well. But of all those folks who have had the student loans, I'm afraid that maybe too many folks have had sort of like an out of sight, out of mind approach to their loans. And it's understandable that that's the case, because when you haven't had to pay for over 3 years, you're going to tend to forget about that liability.
Yeah.
But depending on, you know, how much it is that you owe and how high that monthly payment is, it could likely come as quite a shock for some folks out there. And so hopefully you've been preparing, you've been saving, you've been paying off maybe some of those other high interest rate debts in your life, the credit card debts that are closer to 20%.
Which is what we've been recommending for years now.
Yeah, and you've been using this as a way to make more progress than you would have otherwise. But either way, you've only got a few months to prepare, and it is time to start tightening the belt so that you're going to be ready for that payment to begin here at the end of the summer. And again, because of the way this agreement came about, another pause is not on the table. It's not like yet another kick of the can down the road, like it was being handled over the past.
The can
few
is firmly cemented in place now.
That's right. So yeah, reconfigure your budget. You know, cut back where you can now, so that when those loan payments resume, your finances, they're not immediately going to get wrecked.
Yeah, exactly. You've had time, but even if you're like, you did kind of not really take some of the steps that we discussed or encouraged folks to take, you still have a little bit of time to reincorporate and to get prepared, right? Don't let it smack you upside the head come the end of August, beginning of September. All right, let's talk about budgeting for a second, Matt. This student loan payment pause going away might cause some folks to have to rethink budgeting, right? And they mm-hmm. might be like, I kind of stopped budgeting and it just wasn't as important to me for a while because
needed to.
Yeah, I lost $500 a month that I was going out the door. Now I got to keep, you know, in my pocket, in my bank account. But a new survey from Ally went into depth about how people decide to budget, the specific way in which they choose to do it. And they found that a lot of folks, 60% of folks, still prefer the old-fashioned method of tracking their purchases with pen and paper.
Which is... That's very surprising to me.
Very surprising. I was shocked.
I'm fine with it, but totally. It's just I feel like I'm kind of old school
with your Excel spreadsheets.
Using Excel, but for folks that are like literally using pen and paper, that's kind of mind-blowing to me.
I mean, what's next? What percentage use chisel and stone, right? That's my question. But it really is whatever works for you. We don't care which method you're using if you're writing hieroglyphics to track your finances as long as you're tracking them, right?
If it works for you.
But sure. If that's your thing. But if you are one of the 33%, which is another stat from the survey, of folks who have trouble sticking to a budget, maybe try something new. Maybe if that's not quite working out for you, if you tried to do the pen to paper thing and it hasn't sufficed, check out some sort of software or something, an app that you can have on your phone and managing your finances more in a more online way. If that's going to be helpful, we'd suggest checking out YNAB. That's a really great software that has helped a lot of How to Money listeners over the year. Maybe you don't need that. Maybe you just need a zero-based budget or maybe you can just simplify your budget. Maybe your budget needs to be less complex so you can actually keep up with it. We actually have an article on the website. We'll link to it in the show notes about different methods of budgeting that work for different folks. It's not a one-size-fits-all thing. Can't just be like, go here, do this. This is how you budget. So much depends on your personality. But if you can find the thing that works for you and stick to it, that's going to make all the difference.
Yeah. So actually, while we're talking about Ally, that you mentioned that this is an Ally survey that we're referring to. I received an email recently, and they said that they're going to be updating the name of their checking account, and they're going to change the name to a spending account, which... It took me a second to think about it, and I realized that, oh, yeah.
Makes sense.
The reason it's called a checking account is because back in the day, that's the account that you had tied to your checkbook.
Yeah.
And nobody knows what that is anymore. It's not called a checking account because you should be checking in on it.
Like, right.
It's called a checking account because you literally wrote paper checks from it. And we're older than the average millennial. So, I certainly remember writing a lot of checks in my day. Still mm-hmm. write, like... one a month to the childcare place.
There's literally
the only place.
One or two people who still only accept checks, and it always shocks me.
But for all the other millennials out there, it just makes sense. I'm glad to see that they're moving along with the times and they're calling things by how it is that you interact with them. Naming matters. You know, this is one of the reasons that we talk... Maybe we shouldn't be talking about this because I'm not sure yet if we have enough time, but HSAs, health savings accounts, it's one of the reasons we hate that, because when you hear health savings account, of course you think you shouldn't be investing that money because it's called a savings account
Save the money for healthcare expenses, and that is the worst possible way to use that account if you're saving for
exactly.
the here and now.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I just wanted to mention that because...
Maybe not the worst possible way to use the account. The worst possible way would be to not use the account.
At all, yeah.
But the best possible way is to invest inside of that account. But yeah, you're right. The way we...
Names matter. Uh-huh. And I was just glad to see Ally kind of moving along with the times.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've been talking about the resurgence of cash a lot here on the show. It's always been important, but savers, they got crushed for more than a decade. We were experiencing meager returns on our savings, as Jason Zweig, he wrote about it in the journal recently. He said, the Federal Reserve was all but ordering you to move your money out of cash.
Yeah, that's what it felt like.
That's definitely what it seemed like that they are doing. But it doesn't anymore. But still, for savers who have been reluctant to move their money out of the big banks, who aren't paying hardly anything at all, inflation has just put them in an even worse position because the value of your money, if you have an account with one of the big banks paying 0.04%, that money is getting destroyed much more quickly. It's deteriorating. And so the only way to avoid it is to search for higher yields elsewhere.
Yeah. And those higher interest rates, they're not terribly hard to find. It's the best places to look, though, are treasury bills, CDs, and plain old high interest savings accounts. And CDs in particular, Matt, I think they're looking more enticing, in particular because you're able to lock in a higher rate for a specific period of time, right? Like CIT still crushing it on savings, paying close to 5%. But CD laddering, I think, is an effective strategy for folks who want to maximize the returns of medium-term savings that they're holding on to. I-bonds, hot there for a minute, not as attractive as CDs right now, though. You can lock in these rates on CDs, by the way, for 12, 18 months, or even as little as like 6 months. And so I think the why CDs are so attractive right now is because savings rates aren't guaranteed to remain elevated for months and years to come.
Exactly.
Like, we could see those rates start to deteriorate. And so taking the bird in the hand, if you don't need all of your savings to be fully liquid, stocking away in chunks, 6, 12, and 18-month increments, chunks of your savings can make sense. That strategy is called CD laddering. So if you've got, let's say, $50,000 that you want to save and you only need access to 20 of it in a liquid savings account, well, great. Take advantage of the high interest savings account from somewhere like CIT or Ally or Capital One. And then with the other $30,000, put 10 into a 6-month CD, 10 into a 12-month CD, and 10 into an 18-month CD, taking advantage of those higher rates, locking in that increased payout instead of just hoping the rates don't go back down.
Well, that's the thing. I think that it's natural to assume that rates will continue, that previous activity will continue as is, right?
That's always what we think.
Yeah. Like, it's totally natural to think, well, why would I lock that money away when rates continue to climb? And honestly, that's one of the benefits of going with some of the different no penalty CDs that are out there, because mm-hmm. you can put that money in there and then withdraw it if you are able to find better rates elsewhere. But the reason that we're mentioning CDs rather than savings accounts is that the rates aren't guaranteed to stay as elevated as they are. They might, but we just don't know. Yeah. We just don't know that for
hard
for
hard fact. To predict. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about housing here for a second. You know, at least a part of the reason why homes cost so much more money now is because they are being built bigger as well as fancier. There are more luxury homes out there than ever.
Yeah. We like to talk about the price of a house across decades, but the truth is we're not necessarily comparing apples and apples. We're comparing apples and pears or something like that, because the size of a home and the amenities that homes have now have drastically changed. So a house in 1970 doesn't equal a house that's built in 2023.
No, exactly. Yeah, everyone's expecting the nicer finishes.
Where's my shiplap? You
know? Exactly. But builders, they just don't care about some of these smaller homes out there as well. Some of the sub 2,000 square feet homes, the smaller ones, they just don't make them as much money. But that being said, when it comes to housing, we actually saw a bit of good news recently. It turns out that homes, they've actually been shrinking in size. They're down a couple hundred square feet from several years ago. The average new home size, it's now at 2,500 square feet, and that's actually down from 2,700 square feet, which is it's really interesting, honestly, because mm-hmm. consumer demand, maybe it's actually changing, or maybe builders, they're just responding to the increased costs of everything out there, from labor to materials. We're not totally sure, but I think this is a good trend. I think one of the reasons too might be just because, like, since the 60s and 70s, we've only seen the size of homes just totally, like, completely skyrocket. Mm-hmm. And also during that same period of time, we have seen the sizes of the average size of the family drastically decrease.
Yeah.
And
a lot more square footage per person.
Yes.
Too,
you know,
when you think
and
about
I
it.
Think folks have just sort of woken up a little bit and they realized, oh, wait a minute, we've got this giant house with nobody to stick in this house.
We're heating and cooling. We're paying,
yes,
paying for extra space.
It's inefficient. Yeah. And my hope is that folks are just being more intentional and efficient, not only with their spaces, but with their money. Because if you're not having to heat and cool and furnish and pay taxes on this giant McMansion, well, you're going to be able to do more interesting, satisfying things with your money, like mm-hmm. going on a vacation, or not even spending it on yourself, like giving that money away. But it seems like excess fat is being trimmed off in this case when it comes to houses. And
yeah.
That makes me happy.
I know. I like that too. It's a good trend. Hope it continues, because yeah, the problem, there aren't many starter homes available and smaller homes for people. And we need more supply, but in particular, we need more supply of smaller, more accessible homes. So this is good.
Yeah.
By the way, I saw this, Matt, this week. The burbs are popping. And it's not just because everyone's following the trend that we started last summer. Like
It's all the How to Money Boys.
Right, yeah.
It's all our fault.
New stats show that nearly half of all millennials expect to buy a home in the burbs, which I thought was kind of cool. And the reasons cited were work from home, being able to work from anywhere. It's like, why not move a little more rural? I don't need to be as close to the office, which makes sense. And then affordability. It's just a little bit cheaper the further out you go from mm-hmm. a downtown location typically. So that's
both
kind of interesting
reasons
to note on the housing
that
front.
We considered moving out.
It was part
to the
of
burbs
our
as well.
Part of our reason for the trek, for
part
sure.
Our decision making matrix,
yeah.
For sure.
So, all right, we got more to get to, including a ridiculously cheap way to see movies in the movie theater. We'll get to that and more right after this.
Mm-hmm.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Joel, longer days and warmer weather, it means our family is spending a lot more time outside. It's great. Literally yesterday, I was in the front yard, Kate was in the garden, and I was kicking the soccer ball around with a couple of the kids. I'm loving it. But something else that you can do for your family this spring, shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius as part of your financial planning for the year. Kate and I both have policies in place, and that means we have peace of mind so that if something were to happen to either of us, our family can cover expenses while getting back on our feet.
Yeah, with Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Even if you already have a life insurance policy through work, by the way, it may not have enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. On top of that, Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies. That means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
That's right. So save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. All right, we are back in the Friday Flight Continues, Joel, and as you know, it is now time for the ludicrous headline of the week.
Always my favorite time of the week.
It is, man. Okay, so this one, speaking of time, this is from Time Magazine, time.com, and the article read, "Ditching a phone case is the latest symbol of stealth wealth."
Boo.
And there's multiple things that we dislike about this article, but the basic premise is that not having a case on your phone, it reflects your ability to buy a new one, no problem, right? Like without even batting an eyelash, if you were to accidentally drop it and shatter the screen.
By the way, I think Succession, the show on HBO, kind of started this whole trend of like, these rich people who don't have cases. Is this the new symbol of wealth? And so this is what Time is kind of pivoting on.
It makes sense. Like, I guess I don't pay enough attention when I watch shows or movies, but you're not, it does seem like an additional thing that they're not going to make the actors hold. You know, like, I don't know. It kind of just seems a little too real. Like, I feel like it would need to be like a docuseries, like a true reality show where they're showing real life as opposed to Succession.
Yeah, because reality shows...
That's not real life.
Are real life, Matt.
It's more real life than Succession, I'll say that much. But I get that folks might want to go caseless. You know, you get to enjoy the sleekness of your iPhone that's impeccably designed. And even though I've got a newer iPhone and it's got that, I think it's called the ceramic shield, where the screen, it's like supposed to be four times harder than the Gorilla Glass out there. Even still, I've learned my lesson from previous phones.
Yeah, I roll and with cheaper phones than you do.
I do the case thing, still.
We talked about me shattering my screen when I bought my new Pixel, like within days. And
that's the worst part.
And I was like, it's a much cheaper phone. I think I'm going to roll with no case. And then I did it. And
it fell off your... I can't believe it
my
fell off.
My nightstand.
That's what's so ridiculous. It's one thing if you drop it out while you're walking around and it lands on the sidewalk, but the fact that it happened inside your house is the mind-blowing part. But not only the
case. I'm ashamed.
Like, get yourself the... I've even got... Again, even with my fancy glass on the newer phone, I still put one of those little clear glass shields on there as well. And once it gets scuffed up enough, I swap that thing out and slap a new cheap one on there.
Yeah.
But having that case on your phone is going to be the cheapest insurance policy. It's certainly much better than like actually paying for an insurance policy on your phone. So the reason we're covering this is we don't want you to read headlines like this and think, oh yeah, I don't need a case. I'm going to remove my case. I'm going to toss that thing in the trash in order to look fancy. Because if so, it'll probably be an unwise financial move.
Yes.
Yeah. I do understand it kind of sucks that the cases, they make your phone a little bulkier, but it's worth it.
Yes. Yeah, and I think if you really want to head in that direction, the direction of caselessness, channeling your inner Succession character or whatever, like make sure you have cell phone insurance through one of your credit cards, not one of those third-party policies that's going to cost quite a bit of money. Get kind of that essentially free coverage through one of the credit cards that you have. Bilt, for instance, which is a great credit card for renters, has a great cell phone insurance policy attached to it. If you read the fine print, jump through the hoops and make sure you're qualifying for it. Typically, what that means is paying your cell phone bill via that credit card every single month. The Chase Freedom Flex, that's another great option too that provides some really healthy coverage when it comes to your cell phone. You find a credit card that's basically able to give you this coverage essentially for free. And one more thing, Matt, that I took an issue with in that headline, was that they called this a stealth wealth symbol, like this move.
I'm glad you are getting to this.
And that's so silly, because in episode 650, we talked about stealth wealth, what it is. And the goal in that episode, we said, is to accrue wealth, not to flaunt it. And a caseless phone, it's not the equivalent of driving a Mercedes-Benz or something, I don't know, or wearing Gucci or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, stealth wealth has nothing to do with signaling and everything to do with building up that bigger net worth for yourself. So I get why they use that term, but I hate that application of that term in this instance.
Yeah, I get that it's a little more under the radar. When we talked about stealth wealth on that episode, we talked about the stealth bomber. You know,
yeah.
So it is kind of like under the radar. It's a little more subtle, I guess. But even still, you are caring about what other people think. And the whole idea is to not care about what it is that other people think of you. But Joel, let's talk about movies, because Back from the Dead... MoviePass. It has resurrected itself. It has risen from the ashes. And so if you're a fan of seeing movies in the theater, obviously it's gotten all incredibly expensive.
I honestly don't even know quite how expensive it's gotten, Matt, because
I have to look at the stats, because I haven't been to a theater.
I haven't recently. Been I think since the pandemic started, I've been once, and it's not even necessarily because of the pandemic. It's because I have kids and don't go to see movies.
It's a stage of life kind of thing. I completely agree. So I looked it up. Evidently, the average price of a ticket last year was $11.75, which was actually surprising. I would have expected it to be more like the $13 to $14 range or something like that. Maybe that's just because we live here in Atlanta. And
the prices in the heartland bring it down.
You got to think
the coastal price ticket are like $15, $16, $18.
Yeah. And of course, that's before paying for popcorn and drinks, which is also something that you probably want to skip if you're going out. I mean, honestly, like if you think about it, like just going out on a date could cost you around $100 when
just
you're
going to the movies. Yeah.
Accounting for paying for a babysitter, paying for a couple tickets, drinks, popcorn.
That's like not eating dinner.
And honestly, just given how good TVs have become, I honestly see no reason why. I don't know. It's something special, so I get that there might be a desire to go out. But like the convenience that you're giving up when you have to like get dressed and go out, when instead I can pop my own popcorn, my own superior popcorn at home. I can
much less
make
costly.
A whiskey and a Coke. Like you can't do that at the AMC.
Yeah.
I honestly see no reason to go out there and spend this additional money, the cost of this MoviePass, but you've got a perfectly fine TV at home. I guarantee, like everybody out there.
You didn't fully explain MoviePass, so let's talk about that real quick.
Sorry.
Because, yes, I think you're right. Paying the full price of a ticket, that gets prohibitively expensive. If you like to see 3, 4, 5 movies a month,
if this is your craft beer equivalent, then MoviePass could make sense for you.
The price adds up if you're not doing it.
We're
through
talking
MoviePass,
about all the movie buffs out there who want to go see everything in the theater.
Yeah,
it could make sense.
So MoviePass, they have a $10 plan that lets you go see 3 movies a month, and they just launched, I think, this past weekend again, or relaunched. And if you're a movie fanatic, you can pay $40 a month for up to 30 movies in the theater that you can view. And so if you're like, I'm a movie every day kind of person, well, cool. You can watch movies to your heart's content.
Who are these people? Are there literally people out there, though, who are going to go see 40 movies in a single month?
Are there even that many movies to see? I don't even know.
Of course, you're rewatching stuff if you're doing that.
But okay, let's just say you're the $10 a month to watch 3. That seems like I could see a lot of people wanting to do that. And that MoviePass subscribers back in the day, they really loved the product. But eventually, MoviePass couldn't sustain itself, filed for bankruptcy. The business model just wasn't sustainable. So the question is MoviePass going to be able to stick around and continue offering these massively discounted rates to see movies? We'll see. But I think for some How to Money listeners who say, I like to go see a movie every now and again, and you're right, it is too expensive, MoviePass might be the solution. It might just be a short-term solution, depending on whether or not they can make the numbers work. But I think some people are going to find value in MoviePass.
Yeah. I see value in going to... I just don't want to go watch a movie with a bunch of other people. Okay, I will say the experience of going to see live music or seeing like a comedy show or like sports, right? There's something additional that you gain when you're there with a bunch of people, laughing with them, or singing along if it's a concert, or like high-fiving, once Atlanta United scores a goal and people are throwing beer everywhere and you're like high-fiving everybody within reach. That adds significantly to the experience. But I just don't, personally, I don't get the experience of going there, sitting next to other people, and you're all just sitting there quietly watching the thing when I can do that at home.
Breathing the same air.
Sorry for hating on all the folks out there who like to go out and watch movies. But let's talk about maybe the opposite of spending your money on entertainment, investing your money. The heavy lifting in the stock market this year, it has actually been done by just a handful of stocks. 5 in particular: Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, and then the new company on the block, the chip maker, NVIDIA. They've defied gravity. Basically, NVIDIA, they replaced Netflix. That was the old FANG, the FANG stocks, those 5. But the stock market is up just around 10% this year overall. Most people probably aren't aware of that because they're thinking, oh yeah, it's stocks haven't recovered to, and they certainly haven't recovered to post-pandemic.
Not to all-time highs
or whatever. But without the heavy lifting that these stock prices are doing of these select companies, it would actually just be up 1.5%. And so you might be seeing these headlines and thinking, all right, does that mean I should be buying only these companies? What's the takeaway?
The high performers. Why am I settling for these lazy bum stocks?
No, that is not the takeaway. In these 5. So you never know which companies it is that are going to outperform the market. If you opted to just pick individual stocks, individual companies, instead of opting to buy all of them, then that's what you do with an index fund, which is what we recommend. Well, what's going to happen? You're not going to have seen the performance that you would be seeing up until this point.
Unless you pick the right ones.
Exactly.
Which is the point, right? And how long is that right stock going to be the right stock is another question, right? Some folks might think this is the time to get in on a stock like NVIDIA while the getting's good. But is NVIDIA stock going to continue to soar like it has over the past year, and in particular over the past week or two? I mean, it's up 159%. It's trading at a higher earnings ratio than Tesla ever did.
Oh, really?
And Tesla was massively overvalued there for a while.
Yeah, NVIDIA is crushing right now.
And you didn't know when the stock was going to deflate. But I just want to say this. It might not be the best time to start throwing your investment dollars into these specific companies. And look on the bright side, when you invest in index funds, you own a piece of these companies. You share in the spoils, you share in the profit, you share in the return, which is great. But you're just not overly exposed to them, which I think of as a good thing. And it kind of feels like it's not a good thing when those 5 stocks are soaring, but you just don't know what tomorrow holds. You don't know what next week holds or the next year holds. And so the best thing to do is to be content with those average returns, which are fortunately, at least for now, being buoyed essentially by all these companies.
That's right. Yeah. It's always easy in retrospect to look back and say, oh, of course those 5 are going to totally crush. But what's it going to do for the next half of the year? That is yet to be determined.
Anybody's guess.
Yeah. All right, so a quick little story here on the price of cars, as well as, I guess it's a little touch of inflation here as well, but the average price of a new car is inching dangerously close to $50,000, and this is the average price. Obviously, there are That means that there are cars that are costing way more than that folks are buying. It's honestly been astonishing just to see how car prices have continued to skyrocket upwards. Used car prices certainly are better, but they are still rough. A few years ago, 60% of used cars, they actually sold for less than $20,000. Now it's only 30%. Ooh. So we wanted to just mention that $20,000, it does not get you what it used to get you.
Okay,
be prepared to pay more for even a used car.
Yeah, well, I found that out recently myself, and it wasn't fun. I was able to keep my car under the 20K price limit or price threshold. I really wanted to spend less than that. Spent $12,700 on it, which I was pleased about. A solid car for 12 grand. But let me give one more piece of Debbie Downer news, Matt. The cost of repairing your car have gone up as well. 23% higher, in fact, year over year. And car insurance rate, they're up as well. We've talked about that on the show, how car insurance is costing you more. Still, here's the thing. Driving an older car will typically save you on insurance potentially by a whole lot, even if you're paying more for repairs. And so we would suggest paying the increased rate for those repairs is likely worth the money if it keeps you from shelling out massive amounts for a brand new or gently used car. Because if you're thinking, you know what, I hate to put another $700-$800 into this older ride. Well, if it means you get to keep it running and you also avoid the car market, which is completely insane, and dropping 30, 35, 40 grand or something on a new to you used car, well, that $700 was a wise investment. That's really like what you might pay in a single month of car payments.
That's right. Yeah, depreciation, man. You pay out the nose by driving that car off the lot. And actually, speaking of cars, we've got a great episode lined up for y'all on Monday. We're speaking with the car dealership guy, and he is the go-to expert on all things related to the car market. And I say car market specifically because we're not talking about horsepower and stuff like that. He's not like a car guy in that sense. We're talking more like used car prices. What makes and models out there are in highest demand, which
consumer
are driving,
advice for navigating this crazy market,
which
too.
Are driving the prices up. Those are the kind of things we're going to be discussing with the car dealership guy. You can look forward to that one here on Monday. But Joel, that's going to be it, buddy, for this episode. Listeners, you can head over to the website at howtomoney.com, and you can find links to some of the different resources, the different stories that we mentioned today, and that's also where you can sign up for our newsletter, the How to Money newsletter, which goes out every Tuesday morning. You can sign up at howtomoney.com/newsletter. It's free and helpful, and we hope that you sign up for it very soon. Why wait? Do it now. But that's going to be it, buddy, for this one. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Coming back to Atlanta. Right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Adatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.